Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 49, we discuss why the Columbus Crew controversy could be the best thing to happen to MLS. News about the River Plate's Boca Juniors game being streamed in the US. Details about YouTube TV being added to new streaming devices. And how the Bundesliga is leading the way with new audio technology. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. So, Kartik, let's kick it off and talk about what you've been watching this past week.
Yeah, I guess I'm realizing now that the first thing I watched this week was Atlanta. Columbus from Atlanta. It was a fairly entertaining game for a 0-0, and then a dramatic penalty shootout where Zach Steffen, the crew keeper, made just an unbelievable world-class save, the type of save you don't see very often, even in penalty shootouts. And Taylor Twellman, rightly on the ESPN broadcast, lauded it. And Columbus advanced on penalty kicks, and there were enough people watching this game to make you think, oh, well, maybe there's something here, or maybe it's the Atlanta game, right? It's the Atlanta factor. 309,000 viewers watching this game, and obviously that we're going to get back to that whole viewership thing later in the show. The next day I watched Mainz and Eintracht Frankfurt was Ross Fletcher and Ian Joy, no Eric Winalda anymore on Fox for this period of time during the USSF election. Pretty enjoyable game. Good call from those two. The next morning, Manchester United Spurs, which was a more open game than I think maybe we had expected with Mourinho against a big team. Spurs without Harry Kane decided also to rotate their team a little bit with an eye on Champions League with Real Madrid midweek. And the game was fairly open at times. As I said, it was more open than I think we anticipated because we thought Mourinho would park the bus. Manchester United gets the win in the end, but I thought it was a pretty even game. England-Spain, U-17s, which was Ross Fletcher again. This time he was paired with Lauren Barton. A really entertaining game. U-17s can sometimes be very, very entertaining. And this game for a final was remarkably open. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had so many cup finals. We talked about the NWSL, right, a couple weeks ago, the final in Orlando that was just so so physical and negative and you know, more of an American football match, it seemed. But this was a really open, exciting game, exciting final, which England won.
That one, Kartik, I think really that Fox Sports have found their duo for the England matches in the World Cup next summer, and that's Ross Fletcher and Warren Barton. Warren, I think most listeners would know, I'm not a big fan of at all, but more so his studio analysis, which he just keeps on saying in terms of lots of adjectives and not a lot of substance. But as a co-commentator and as somebody that knows this team inside and out, and of course knows the Three Lions, paired with Ross Fletcher, I think the two of them were fantastic. I mean, the game was exceedingly entertaining, even towards the end. It got a bit scrappy and physical, but the passion on display was fantastic to watch. I really enjoyed Fox Sports' coverage of this event in general, but I hope that Fox looks at this and says, here, let's put Ross Fletcher and Warren Barton together for the England games next summer.
Yeah, that's this distinct possibility. You know, based on history at ESPN, they're not going to want Alexi Lalas on England games, given his views. Although, I mean, the reality is every tournament Lalas has made these dire predictions about England, he's proven to be correct. So let's not forget that. Yeah. Next morning, Brighton-Southampton, that was an entertaining game. Then Leicester-Everton with Arlo White over on Big NBC. It really kind of disappointing game from the standpoint of, I mean, Leicester were good under Claude Puel. I expected them to come out flying and buzzing, and they did. But David Unsworth, who's a guy I remember well as a player for Everton, shook up the team, went to kind of a more traditional Premier League side, if you will. He dropped every new signing that they had made other than Wayne Rooney, who, of course, he had played with, Unsworth, in Rooney's first stint at Everton, brought Aaron Lennon back into the team, brought Kevin Morales back into the team, brought Tom Davies back into the team, guys who are Premier League players and experienced Premier League players. And well, Davies is only in the second season, but is part of a kind of an English core of that team. And dropped Michael Keane, went with just two center backs in Jagielka and Ashley Williams, two experienced center backs, and they got ripped open. They got ripped apart.
Yep. One thing about this match, though, Kartik, that I've talked about in previous weeks in terms of being a cord cutter, and usually the ones I struggle with the most in terms of trying to watch the games are the ones that are on over-the-air NBC. Now, I've got a indoor HD antenna that I can hook up, but it's not hooked up currently, but I could hook it up and watch over-the-air NBC games. But this one, because it was on a Sunday, and that particular match wasn't on Universo, which is usually kind of my backup plan whenever the games are on live NBC and I can't see them on my local Fubo or my local Sling TV, is I kind of switch over to Universo. But with no Universo for this game, I missed the game. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to take a break and just do something different for a couple of hours, and missed the match. So that's been my only kind of negative in terms of cutting the cord thus far. I could, if I thought ahead of time, I could have gone ahead and set up the indoor antenna, which only takes like 5 minutes. But I was like, I'm not going to worry about it. It wasn't meant to be in this particular instance.
Oh, yeah. Backtracking a bit, I forgot about on Saturday, I watched the Bayern RB Leipzig game. And again, I don't know why this keeps happening, but every time these two teams play, Leipzig has an early red card that ruins the match. And this is the third successive time they played in Munich that's happened. Third time in four matches between the two teams, cup and league, and it just ruined what would have been a good spectacle for the league. Two teams fighting to be at the top of the table. Now this weekend, Borussia Dortmund is going to play host to Bayern Munich in what is now a must-win game, or at least a must-draw game for Peter Bosch and Borussia Dortmund, as the league. They've gone from having a 5-point lead in the league to being 3 points behind Bayern in a matter of just a handful of weeks. So Borussia Dortmund, I think, now on a 5-match winless streak in all competitions.
Yeah. They've been poor. And also a listener, a note to the listeners in terms of this match on Saturday, it's on FS2, which is a shame because
college football.
Yeah, FS1's for college football. I mean, in previous years, they've put it on FX. What was that, FXX? I don't know, whichever one it was. But in this instance, no can do. So it's on FS2, which means a lot of fans are going to miss out on this match, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate, actually. And I don't know what Fox's level of commitment is to showing moving Bundesliga games. They did it in the past, as you said, but it doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot this season. Now, maybe after football season ends, that's always the caveat. In college football wise, Fox had a very, very big game on Saturday, which is Ohio State and Penn State. So maybe it just ended up being the wrong weekend. That's what happens, right? NBC has only had one weekend this season where they haven't shown a game over the year, and it was the weekend where Chelsea Man City would have been in that slot. So sometimes you can't control those things, and maybe Fox was just in a bad position with this.
Yep.
Moving on, Vancouver Seattle on Sunday night on ESPN, a terrible match to watch. Brian Schmelzer now, I think, is developing a reputation as a manager who will go away from home in MLS playoff matches and park the bus and look to play on the break. It was a chippy match. Two teams that don't like each other, obviously, neighbors. One of the closest things we have to a derby in the first division in the U.S. and or U.S. and Canada, and it was I just thought a terrible match. Carl Robinson tried to get some attackers on late for Vancouver to make a push, but Seattle was playing pretty defensively, so that was a pretty dour game. There were two MLS playoff games on Monday night. The Red Bull versus Toronto game for me was a disappointment. New York didn't play as well as I had hoped. Foxes.
I enjoyed it, though. I mean, from my side, I thought it was an entertaining game in terms of it was an open game. Yes, the Red Bulls could have been and should have been better, but at times they had spells, they had chances. The one thing I noticed from this match, Kartik, was just strange, was all the empty seats. I was just really surprised by that for a playoff game, especially so close to, you know, it's in New Jersey, but so close to New York. Disappointing there. But actually, the match I thought was pretty relatively entertaining.
Yeah, I think it's just been an underwhelming season for Red Bull, and they've been right at the top of the Eastern Conference the last few seasons, going all the way back to 2011. And this was a season where they didn't perform particularly well, and you only had a few days to sell tickets. So I kind of understand the lack of fans in the seats. And I was disappointed by them because I have very high expectations for a Jesse March managed team with the kind of players they have in their team with Sasha Kleiston and Tyler Adams and Bradley Wright Phillips, among others. So I was disappointed, but Toronto played well, and Giovinco had a brilliant goal, right? Had a brilliant a spot kick or free kick.
Right.
Yeah. Next day, obviously, Columbus, New York City FC. I think we're going to talk a lot about this going forward. Adrian Healy and Taylor Twellman did an outstanding job on this match. There's so much surrounding Columbus, and the number for this match was significantly higher than any other MLS conference semifinal matchup, the other three.
Yeah, this match, I would point out that the video assistant referee incident that happened in the match was a fantastic point in the game, because there was a deliberate elbow on one of the Columbus players, you know, in the head or in the neck, and the referee didn't spot it, but the crew, either up in the booth or in the truck, noticed it, radioed down to the referee to let him know about that. The one thing I was disappointed with, even though eventually it was awarded as a red card, was just the amount of time, again, it took to figure it out, because the referee got the call over the radio, then ran over to the one side of the pitch, I guess, to go on the walkie-talkie to talk to somebody, probably the booth, to probably get a clearer probably signal, who knows, and then had to run over to the other side of the pitch then to look at the actual TV screen. And I was thinking to myself, like, why wouldn't the walkie-talkie be near the actual TV screen, so it could cut down like 30 to 45 seconds in the delay of the game to actually figure out whether or not it should have been a red card or not. But eventually, the correct decision was given. So it is a win after all. But just again, I think just have to work out the kinks and kind of speed up that system a little bit.
Yeah, I have to say, though, it's not as bad as it is in Germany. In Germany, there are long delays. It's really kind of undercutting the enjoyment and the flow of the match. That having been said, in Germany, they're getting the calls right. I mean, they're absolutely getting the calls right, which in MLS, you could argue, they're not always. And you know, this goes back to the conversation I had with Howard Webb now, 3 months ago, where we discussed the compromise or the trade-off between match flow and getting calls right. And Webb was somewhere in the middle on that. Yes, we're gonna be able to correct a lot of bad calls, but not every missed call, because once another event happens, we just forget about it. Whereas in Germany, I mean, I've seen them blow something dead 15, 20 seconds after the fact, and then go back and look, and then have a drop ball. So different interpretations. Also, keep in mind in MLS the replay official, the VAR, is at the ground, whereas in Germany they're in Cologne in a big studio. So, which is the way it's done, by the way, in American college football, where if you the ACC conference that here in Florida, Florida State and Miami are in, the replay officials are in Charlotte, watching on television. So, that's the way it's done in some even American leagues. Moving on into Champions League on Tuesday, I had Chelsea and Roma on, got to watch it, but had it on mute. It was a great performance from Roma. So props to them. Didn't really watch the pregame show. I know we'll be discussing that when you go through what you watched, and look forward to chatting about that. Wednesday, was able to watch Napoli and MCFC. Very, very entertaining match, open match, switched on and off a little bit with Spurs and Real Madrid. Guy Mowbray and Danny Higginbotham, great call for the Napoli-Manchester City game. great point after the match on Fox's postgame show, Alexi Lawless. Now, Sergio Ramos is such a controversial figure. We don't talk about him much on this show, but I think he tends to polarize opinion and opinion among those who cover the sport. And Lawless, who is a former defender, makes the point, and I thought really correctly, that there is a break for Spurs, and Ramos fouls, I think it was Christian Eriksen or Dele Alli, fouls him, but doesn't break up the play, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, if you're going to commit a foul in the open field and take a yellow card, anyway, I Lawless's words were, you need to be a professional, you need to break up the play.
Right.
There's something really wrong with Real Madrid. I didn't mention earlier, I also watched pieces of the Real Madrid-Girona match. The Girona match was, believe it or not, because this is something that I think people assume when they see Real Madrid loses the likes of Girona or Getafe or somebody, that they were peppering the opposition with shots and the opposition keeper made great saves or they were just shots that hit the post. Mm-hmm. That wasn't really the case in that game. I mean, Real Madrid looked they looked like a team that was defeated. It was similar to the way the U.S. looked against Trinidad and Tobago going back a few weeks. And then this game against Spurs, they were just not at the races at all.
I thought the same thing too. I mean, I was just surprised. I was shocked, really, at how bad Real Madrid was, how well played Spurs did. But I just could not believe it. It almost felt like Real Madrid were half asleep. It was just very strange, especially kind of when you think about back to the first leg of this match, and how fantastic and how many shots that Real Madrid peppered Hugo Lloris with, and it just was end-to-end kind of just, well, actually, it was just one-way attack against Spurs, and Spurs were lucky to hang on for a draw there, but this match was, I just was shocked at how poor Real Madrid were.
Yeah, there was a debate which descended into kind of name-calling, for lack of a better word, between Dan Thomas and Craig Burley on Monday's ESPN FC show about about Barcelona and Real Madrid, because I guess Burley took the occasion to try and chide Thomas for saying, look, you keep asking me, is this the end of an era with Barcelona? It's clearly the end of an era with Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. They're already 8 points back, and it just this kind of descended into this. It was entertaining, but I think Burley's point was well taken, which is that we all were dismissing Barcelona preseason. We were dismissing Barcelona based on Neymar leaving and Iniesta being older and maybe a perceived drop off in the play of Busquets and Pique, when in reality it's Real Madrid we needed to look at, because they are so dependent on a single player to bail them out in tough matches like this match against Spurs, that if Ronaldo isn't a magician, isn't playing at an extra world, an unworldly level, they're not winning these matches. And that's what we're seeing now. Ronaldo is struggling. He's played a lot of football. He has had a summer tournament three of the last 4 years, right? He had Confederations Cup this summer, this past summer, Euros before. So there's a lot of tread on those tires. And there isn't anyone else on that team able to step up and be a match winner for them. And we saw that in this game. And we even saw in this game, I think, a midfield with Harry Winks from Spurs, you know, latest guy Pochettino has plucked from their youth ranks and integrated into the first team, really controlling the flow of the game. I mean, I thought Isco, the little bit of this I watched, I thought Isco was really poor. So a lot to talk about with Real Madrid.
Yeah, this match actually reminded me a lot of Portugal. When you've seen Portugal play in previous competitions or games, really, where there's so much reliance on Cristiano Ronaldo, but the rest of the team kind of sit back a little bit and just wait for Ronaldo to lift the game slightly. I thought Real Madrid also obviously missing Gareth Bale. I think that was a big miss there. But Benzema was invisible. There were so many players on this pitch that were invisible. But congratulations to Spurs on a fantastic, shocking victory. I watched this game from a coffee house. Not the Amsterdam type, but a coffee house in Delray Beach, Florida. Just really enjoyed watching this one, because 99% of the time I'm watching from home, from my home office. So I was really, really, really enjoyed kind of going out and actually watching this match here.
Would point out that Alexi Lawless and Brad Friedel and Warren Barton had a long conversation, maybe a longer conversation than they should have had on it. But this is what Gary Lineker does on social media, about Gary Lineker tweeting about Benzema being substandard and Zidane feeling he needed to respond to Lineker. It's funny, Lineker, and I'm a big Gary Lineker fan, Chris, but it seems like Lineker is having more impact these days with his tweets than with anything he's saying on air at the BBC.
It's true. Well, that's the thing that's a breath of fresh air, though, Kartik, is that Wednesday's pregame, UEFA Champions League pregame show, because Grant Wall wasn't on it, they had 30 minutes to actually discuss, hey, the Champions League. And the tweet was brought up. I think there's a couple other interesting conversations and topics that they had, and it allowed the show to kind of flow a little bit more naturally, given it's a Champions League pregame show. Yeah, but I thought Wednesday was great in terms of the analysis and coverage by Fox. Tuesday was a different story, and Tuesday on the set, instead of Eric Winalda, it was Ian Joy, which was fine. Ian Joy did a great job. But I don't know, Kartik. I think Fox Sports at this point feels like it's Fox News or Pravda, because on Tuesday at the pregame show, they bring on Grant Wall, which is okay. I mean, his segment was kind of the teaser that they had was that this is an American kid that's playing at Roma, and he's got some questions about like whether or not he's going to be able to stick with the team or whatever it was. Kind of an interesting teaser, so it brings you back in. And the first story that he comes out with is that several sources have revealed to Grant Wall that Dan Flynn, the USSF CEO, was planning on stepping down, but he's decided that he's going to stay in office. And essentially, the feedback or kind of the input on this story was that look at how great this is for USSF. It's going to add stability to the federation, and isn't this wonderful? And I'm like, oh my god, this is the same guy, Dan Flynn, who was in front of the U.S. Senate commission about corruption and the influence of corruption in FIFA. And he was called to the mic and was there in Washington, D.C. for this U.S. Senate commission, and did, to me, I thought, a horrible job in terms of representing the USSF. He went there instead of Galati, because Galati was too scared to be on record. And to me, Dan Flynn was that's just one instance, but one instance of just like how weak he is as a CEO. And meanwhile, Fox is kind of trumpeting this as great news, and this is news, and this is something that we should all care about.
And something I ironically reported Monday night, or re-reported 4 years later, Dan Flynn was on the small task force committee from CONCACAF that actually awarded the marketing rights to Traffic Sports for CONCACAF, which is an entity that then a year and a half later was indicted and pled guilty to all these charges of bribery and money laundering as part of the FIFA investigation, and whose executives have all been arrested, or several of them have been arrested in the FIFA probe, and one of which, Aaron Davidson, is awaiting sentencing as we speak. Dan Flynn actually voted for that contract marketing deal. So when you talk about FIFA corruption, he's not you could interpret that he's not completely clean, and the U.S. Soccer Federation isn't completely clean. If there is one person who needs to go, because I Grant Wall has made the point, maybe as a defense of Galati or whatever, that Dan Flynn and I believe Jay Berhalter, who is the brother of Columbus Crew head coach Greg Berhalter, actually run the U.S. Soccer Federation. Given the situation the U.S. Soccer Federation is in, which includes now being sued, that was in court on Tuesday. By the time some people listen to this podcast, you might know if the NASL got a temporary injunction. But being sued by a member league, which includes the controversy over equal pay with the women and the CBA, which includes the CAS case where they've been where there are two clubs, Kingston and Miami FC, that have taken file a claim with the Court of Arbitration on Sports, and then also given the absolute disaster of the U.S. men's program, the fact that he is the most powerful man in U.S. soccer, and he is staying on, and it is couched by Grant Wall as kind of a favor to soccer. Just kind of tell, gives you the Pravda Fox News feel of how Fox Sports has become when it comes to any topic related to U.S. soccer and the U.S. Soccer Federation.
There's no objectivity from Fox Sports in terms of reporting this. There's no – I mean, I would love to have been a fly on the wall in terms of how this story came to Grant Wall, whether it was USSF, you mean, whether it was Dan Flynn himself or – You mean the press corps within U.S. soccer that called Grant and said, hey, you know, we got a story for you for Tuesday. Maybe you can do it as a lead story. Here we got exclusive about Dan Flynn was thinking about stepping down, which if he was thinking about stepping down, he should have stepped down. But no, right. No, he's coming back. I mean, isn't this wonderful news? Isn't this great for the future of U.S. soccer? I'm like, give me a break.
Chris, think about this, though. This is the important point I was making before the U.S. was eliminated from the World Cup. If the U.S. had or from World Cup qualification, right, they didn't make it to the World Cup. If the U.S. had had three group games in Russia, we probably would have been subjected to this sort of talk on the Fox studio shows the whole first 3 weeks of the tournament or 2 weeks of the tournament while the U.S. was still alive. And then we could there would only be a pivot from Fox to actually covering the type of storylines that ESPN traditionally covered in the last few World Cups once the U.S. was eliminated. So, again, this reminds me, this very episode reminds me that while I'm very upset from a sporting perspective, the U.S. has been eliminated, from a TV viewership perspective, I can probably watch Fox more safely than I would have otherwise. I probably would have been forced to watch Telemundo, a lot of the World Cup on Telemundo, because Fox, they force American storylines into anything they do. I want to remind our listeners that when the U.S. was eliminated in the 2015 Gold Cup in the semifinals by Jamaica, half the pregame show for the final between Jamaica and Mexico was dedicated to U.S. men's national team. Where do they go from here? When they had been eliminated in that tournament, and there was a game, a final, a championship game involving two other teams that was about to kick off. So that's where they are when it comes to storylines with the U.S. Same, very much kind of the same thing in the Women's World Cup as the tournament progressed in Canada in 2015. So par for the course from them. They are like Pravda when it comes to this, it comes to U.S. soccer.
Well, my guess is, without seeing it, Kartik, that ESPN FC probably didn't even mention one word about this. I mean, it's a non-story, really.
No, it wasn't on the ESPN FC show that night.
All right, and then in addition to the other matches, I saw many of the matches that you saw, Kartik. Some of the other matches that I did see that you didn't get a chance to see. I saw Besiktas against Monaco. This was the early game on Wednesday in the Champions League. What an entertaining match this was. End-to-end action, and Besiktas, just incredible atmosphere. As always, I just love that team in terms of how passionate those fans are. And seeing players like Ryan Babel and Joao Moutinho, just older in age, still have some of that skill, but not quite there in their prime by any means. But just a really entertaining match to watch. Also, I think the only other matches I watched that you might not have caught were Burnley-Newcastle. Pretty much a dud of a game until towards the end, but and also saw Arsenal against Swansea. The only thing I can say about this one was that the NBC Sports Gold service worked like a charm, no problems at all, and the game was forgettable. Oh, God. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, a lot this week in terms of what's been happening. More bad news for traditional TV, cable, satellite providers. AT&T saw a decline of 251,000 subscribers for DirecTV and 134 IPTV UVer subscribers during the third quarter. So that's a total of almost 400,000 between the two for a net loss of 385,000 traditional TV viewers. That's for one quarter. So if you prorate that over a year, that's almost 1.6 million. And you see why the cable subscription numbers for each channel, which has TV rights to soccer broadcasts, continue to decline.
Yeah. And that goes across all sports too, not just soccer, but definitely numbers continue to decline there. So a relatively new streaming company called Fanatis will be streaming Sunday's River Plate against Boca Juniors' Superclásico. The legal streaming company will be offering a limited amount of free online passes to watch the game. So head on over to worldsoccertalk.com for the links and more information about that.
That's pretty exciting, and that will be obviously on Sunday, a big Superclásico match. Moving on, DirecTV Now has launched a new promotion where brand new customers to the streaming service can get a free Roku streaming stick if they prepay for 2 months of service. More details can be found over at our site at worldsoccertalk.com.
Now, YouTube TV, we've been talking about this in previous episodes, but they're rolling out apps now for the Roku, Apple TV, Xbox One, and other streaming devices. So right now, for example, the Roku one should be live in a few weeks, and they'll be adding YouTube TV apps to a lot of these different streaming packages. That's good news for YouTube TV subscribers because oftentimes, I think a lot of us cord cutters end up living, in quotation marks, on, say, a Roku or Amazon Fire or other devices. And without YouTube TV being on any of those, really, it's a challenge. So for me personally, using YouTube TV, I've been using Chromecast, but it's an extra step because you should have to unplug the Roku, plug in the Chromecast, and set it up. So it takes a few more steps than it would if it's already installed. The other thing about YouTube TV, too, and just a slight correction on what I mentioned a few weeks ago when I did talk about YouTube TV and whether or not it was going to be a good fit for soccer fans or not, I still stand by saying that it's not a good fit for most soccer fans, but I do want to correct myself because I did mention at the time that it didn't get FS1 or FS2. Actually, it does. The way that it's laid out, sometimes it's difficult to see the channel layouts, but it does have FS1, FS2, your local Fox, as well as ESPN, but the big one that it doesn't have for me, at least, is beIN Sports. And you're missing out on everything from La Liga to Serie A to a lot of these World Cup qualifiers and much, much more. So far, YouTube TV is getting better, and more apps are coming soon. But at this point, still, it's not the complete package for soccer fans.
Yeah, the next one is pretty exciting. DFL subsidiary Sportscast, which produces all the Bundesliga 1 and Bundesliga 2 matches, has launched a new audio production system. Live tracking data on players is used to set the correct input levels for the microphones used to record what is going on the pitch. This creates an entirely new and realistic audio experience for the viewer. Using the existing microphones, their positions on the edge of the field, and their directional characteristics, the system determines which microphone can best capture what is happening on the field at any given time, automatically sending the necessary commands to the mixing console. The sound engineer sitting in the broadcast van can use automated mixing of field microphones in the overall mix, and thus has far more leeway for enhancing the aesthetics of the broadcast sound during the match. And I think when it comes down to it, Chris, one of the reasons the Premier League has been more popular, there are multiple reasons, right? We don't have to get back into this, the discussion we've had over and over again. But one of the reasons the Premier League has been more popular than other leagues in European leagues on American television has been the way they use sound to enhance their telecasts, their broadcasts. And the Bundesliga, I notice, has been making strides the last few years in catching up with the Premier League and giving really kind of a great aesthetic feel if you're watching a broadcast. And this will just even further enhance it and close that gap even further. It's a lesson for La Liga and Serie A and Liga and the other leagues to see what the Premier League and Bundesliga are doing on the audio side and how that can enhance the popularity of their leagues in markets like the U.S. market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think audio by far is one of those things that we kind of often forget about in terms of being soccer fans, how important that is. And Kartik, you and I were at Goal TV probably, 10 years ago, it was, and we saw the guy, kind of the audio mixer that had the feed, and he was kind of trying to balance, okay, how much of the crowd noise can we put into the audio, the actual TV broadcast of, I think it was a Bundesliga game, actually, and trying to balance that with the commentators. So they can control kind of, okay, the crowd noise, whether to set it back a bit and then have the commentators be louder, or kind of try and find a nice mix between the two, which I prefer. We got a tweet this week, too. I forgot who it was from, but somebody saying about the Champions League in terms of, I think it was the Man United Benfica match, and just saying that, no, it was Spurs Real Madrid. And he was just saying how quiet the fans were. And he's like, there's no way that those, you mean, 80 to 90,000 fans at Wembley Stadium are that quiet for a game like this, especially such a, I mean, entertaining game.
Yes.
He says it just seems that the audio is kind of mixed kind of poorly. But, yeah, it's a big deal. And actually, it's good to see that Bundesliga is leading the way in terms of using technology to try to improve this audio.
Specifically on that visit we made to Goal TV, and I think it was 10 years ago. I think it was November of 2007, if I remember correctly. So exactly 10 years ago, the guy who was mixing told us how much better the raw feed they got from the Bundesliga was versus La Liga. So even at that time, La Liga was miles behind the Bundesliga in terms of what kind of audio product they were giving to their official broadcaster in the United States. And quite frankly, 10 years later, I don't think that gap has been bridged at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you've seen, I think, Serie A and some other places too, where it just sounds like, it really pulls you in. And sometimes with Serie A games, especially kind of the stadiums that have the track around the pitch, probably same thing with West Ham too, with their London stadium, is that you don't feel as intimate with the actual experience. And sometimes it is subconscious. It is one of those things that with that audio, it pulls you into the broadcast, it pulls you into the picture. And when it's not done right, it's very noticeable. And when it's done right, you may not notice it, but it just definitely pulls you right in. So let's move on to TV ratings, Kartik. On this section, I purposely removed the Columbus Crew ones because we'll talk about that in the final segment of the show. But some of the numbers, feel free to jump into, Kartik, if you see any that are of interest to you. But like the big one from this past week was 1.2 million people watched the Monterrey against Club America match on Univision. And Liga MX is back in terms of some big numbers. This is like, what, the second or third week in a row that they've had some million plus numbers. And they continue to rule the United States in terms of the most viewers for matches.
Yeah, there were, again, lower numbers than we've seen in the past for Premier League matches this past weekend. 710,000 for Chelsea Bournemouth on NBC, 329 for West Brom Man City on NBCSN, and 327. I thought this would be higher for Man United Spurs on NBCSN. Granted, it was a 7:30 a.m. kickoff, but we've seen much higher numbers than that for big games at 7:30 a.m. So not quite sure how to explain now, 3 weeks after the U.S. Gets eliminated from the World Cup, the continued kind of decline in Premier League numbers. Although this week will be the big test, right, with the two matches we have on Sunday. Vancouver, Seattle, 250,000 on ESPN on Sunday, the Cascadia match, the highest rated game, which did not include Columbus thus far in the MLS playoffs. That's a really low number too.
Yeah, and that's the thing though, Kartik too. It's on a Sunday. It's on. Oh, it was at 10:30. I think it was late on Sunday. Why are they going up against the NFL on a Sunday? I mean, you can put anything up against the NFL on a Sunday, and it's gonna be a disaster. I just don't understand.
I think part of it was the late kickoff. Honestly, they thought maybe they. I really should check the program listing of the NFL, but maybe the NFL game ends before halftime of that late kickoff.
Yeah, but my point is actually, I'm sorry, my point is more so in terms of why is MLS, you mean, having the playoffs and the MLS Cup final and all these most important matches throughout the entire year, why do they have them up against college football, against NFL at this time of the year? It's just madness.
A total madness. I mean, I've written an article earlier this week for SockTakes of .com. You can check it out at SockTakes.com about calendar change. And Chris, I just don't know. It's so frustrating. It's got to be so incredibly frustrating for Eric Winalda, who's running for USSF president, taking a leave of absence from Fox, and this is one of his key issues, is calendar change, not just from a marketing standpoint, as we're talking about here, but also from a playing standpoint and integrating the U.S. more thoroughly in the world game. But anytime you raise this issue, you get, oh, but we can't do that. It's too cold in the winter. Oh, you know, we'll be going up against football more. Oh, no. It's just, you can't even have the conversation. We're not even having the adult conversation about this. And there are so many fans who just assume what MLS is doing and how they schedule. Or maybe they just don't assume Chris. Maybe they just want to believe it and they don't want to criticize the league or whatever, that how they schedule and the way they're scheduling and the time we're playing and our calendar right now is the only option we have. And you wonder why the U.S. is failing in this sport and flopping at the international level. I mean, this is a clear example. I mean, and again, I'm not publicly making an endorsement on this show, but I would encourage those who are more open-minded to listen to some of the arguments Eric Winalda has made about this calendar issue over the course of a number of years. He's now doing it much more aggressively since he's running for USSF president, but it is about the competition MLS has from other sports at the business end of their season and some serious playing issues. And then also check out that article I wrote at socktakes.com, and you'll see there are – I give 7 or 8 reasons why I believe the calendar should be shifted.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Vancouver-Seattle game. I mean, there was the Houston-Portland game on FS1 on Monday night, and then the Red Bulls against Toronto as part of that doubleheader, too, on FS1 on that Monday night. Red Bulls-Toronto had 132,000 people watching that one, and then Houston-Portland had 149,000, which is pitiful. I mean, it really is for playoffs of MLS on a Monday night. I mean, obviously, they purposely did it on Monday night, so it wouldn't be on Sunday. So that would hopefully help the ratings. Didn't help much at all. If anything, it's probably better. Well, who knows? It was awful, needless to say. But that's the thing, though, too. That's really frustrating for me, is any time that any types of changes, and these are intelligent changes that are want to be raised or discussed about changing anything in MLS, it's seen as an attack. It's seen as kind of like, how dare you, you mean, change anything? Everything is perfect the way it is, which is not. I mean, and that's the thing that's just really frustrating sometimes, is just that it's difficult to have an open dialogue, because then it becomes just a shouting match. And hopefully, whether it's Eric Winalda, who's been talking about this for years, though, as far as calendar changes. Yeah. I mean, why does it take this long to try to get anything changed in MLS? It's just incredibly frustrating.
No, and the thing that's so disappointing is, and I've said this, I mean, I've talked to Winalda myself in the last few weeks. I mean, I talked to him every now and then, and I made this observation to him, and he agreed. I mean, why is it that after we fail, which we did, there is a conversation and an open mind among some of these same people for 2 or 3 days as the shock is kind of being processed. Then they go back into their bunker and say, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. Oh, everything's fine. Yeah, this was just a fluke. The ball went 1 inch wide or whatever Sunil Gulati said. And at that point, you can't have an intelligent, nuanced conversation. You can't even have a nuanced conversation. It's anything you say is then an attack on MLS. It's an attack on U.S. soccer, and it's you're a Euro snob. You don't understand. You're trying to hurt. If you do this, the game will destroy. You know, they use these very kind of hyperbole, which is, oh, well, the game will disappear in the U.S. and we won't have soccer anymore. Mm-hmm. And the game will collapse if you shift the calendar. Okay, you really think we're at that point where if you shift to a to the same calendar, by the way, youth clubs, the same calendar your daughter is playing on with her youth club, you shift to that calendar, the game will just disappear in this country. Okay, if you really believe that, then we can't even have the conversation.
Exactly. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. The first comment is from Scott from McAllen, Texas, and he sent this in through email. He says, I agree with y'all that the USA crash and the issues surrounding it need to be talked about, like my issue with pay for play. The day after the game, it was everywhere in sports media in terms of the U.S. crashing out of the World Cup. Cowherd had a rant and had Lalas on. Twelman was on SportsCenter. And Dan Patrick, I believe, had Landon Donovan on. They covered all the issues we are talking about now. But since then, you haven't heard anything from the bigger talking heads. Maybe a tidbit about Bruce Arena when he resigned. Would it make a difference if they kept the conversation and reporting going? What do you think, Kartik?
Yeah, this is my complaint, that for 2 or 3 days we had great discussions and people were open to the conversations and the idea of change or the concept of change, and it was just a concept at that point. But then once you get further down, they start protecting themselves again. Now the big thing is now, Chris, it's like any other cycle. Okay, the U.S. is done with qualifying. The U.S. has not had to go to a playoff in previous qualifying, right? The previous three hexes, they had finished top of the group, ahead of Mexico, ahead of Costa Rica. So it's like any other cycle in terms terms of playing now. And then now they got a friendly against Portugal, and because they're playing at Portugal, you'd think, oh, they're preparing for a World Cup because they're playing one of the best national teams in the world away. I think when this will set in is either January, when we have the quote Camp Cupcake, and it's not in prep to look at deepening the pool in advance of a World Cup, or maybe it won't happen until the summer when the World Cup is about to kick off. And wow, we're not talking about the U.S.'s 23-man selection for the World Cup. We're talking about you know, what player has made a last ditch run with their form in European leagues or in MLS to make the team. But we're talking about the everyone else, that maybe we can start having the conversation again in a mainstream fashion. But right now, yeah, they've the elites in U.S. soccer have moved past it, and it's like any other time for them, and it's business as usual. So to Scott, I would say there is a possibility we can reopen this, but yeah, it hurts that people have just moved on, and the same people who were upset on the night of October 10th and were in shock and saying the right things on the 11th, 12th, and 13th, now on November 2nd as we record the show, are business as usual types. Oh, there's no big deal. Whatever. You know what? Maybe the World Cup doesn't even matter anymore, right? Because the U.S. isn't in it. So how could it matter as an event?
Which for some people, that's true, definitely. I mean, obviously not for us or for our listeners, but some people believe that. Moving on to the next question, this is from Ian Jett through Twitter, and he says, so my idea is an MLS network. It'll give league national exposure, and it gives fans one place to go to get their coverage, plus highlights, analysis, player profiles, and shows based on the league and maybe even USL. Plus game of the week for the big games, not on FS1 or ESPN. Tons of pros, but a few cons too. Since both you and I, Kartik, mentioned lack of viewers for MLS TV ratings and the U.S. men's national team out of the World Cup, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, Ian, and it's an idea that's been tossed around for a while. The thing is, MLS is never willing to commit the resources to something like this. I'll give you a couple of examples. In 2009, they had the opportunity to buy USL if they just come in with enough money. Then have their own system and not have to create this affiliation agreement and agreements to house reserve teams, et cetera. And they didn't come in with enough money to buy USL because they're by nature pretty risk averse. So New Rock, led by Alec Papadakis, came up with enough money that Nike was asking for, and they sold the league to him. And then 3 years later, MLS had to work an affiliate agreement with USL. So they had an opportunity to buy the league directly under them at the time. This was before the creation of NASL, and Papadakis buying USL led directly to the creation of NASL and team owners splitting off. But the point is, they were risk averse then. Then more recently, this New York Cosmos example, which has shown up in court, right? In this antitrust lawsuit, which NASL's attorneys are using to show that some and U.S. soccer are trying to monopolize, are in collusion and trying to monopolize the sport of this country. To offer $5 million, which is a pittance for the New York Cosmos, is laughable. If you really wanted to stamp out the competition and be effective, you offer $15 or $20 million, you make sure Rocco Commisso doesn't get in there, and you're done with it, right? Mm-hmm. I have seen through the years, when it comes to massive expenditures of resources, with maybe the exception of PRO and the money MLS put in to start PRO and VAR, these sorts of refereeing-related things,
right,
that there is a general risk aversion to pooling a lot of money into a single thing, launching a single product, or to buying a single product. So I don't think MLS has the willingness to do even what USL did, because USL as a league, and then keep in mind they're run differently. They're not run by their owners the way MLS is. They have an independent company, New Rock, led by Alec Papadakis, managing them. We've talked about it before on this show that USL put a lot of their resources that they were getting from expansion fees and member dues into launching USL Productions, which is based here in Fort Lauderdale, down the street from me. MLS, I don't think, has the wherewithal to do something which would be on a much grander scale, because it's a much bigger league, much more money, to launch a television network. So while in theory it's a great idea, and you can show MLS games, U.S. soccer, USL, even some college soccer, women's soccer, obviously, I don't think it's something they're going to do because they're too risk averse to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in regards to Ian's comments, I think in some ways that MLS already has it, not exactly like he's looking for, but MLS Live is essentially what he's talking about. It's a subscription service that you sign up for and watch a lot of these games online and have some additional programming available. But at the end of the day, the most important factor, and the same thing applies to the Premier League and Bundesliga and you name it, any of the major leagues in the world, is that it's TV money that's driving the leagues, that's bringing in the mass, the greatest share of money, that's paying, the millions of dollars for these player contracts. And it's so you're looking at, say, Fox Sports, Univision, even ESPN, NBC, all these other sports broadcasters, BN Sports, etc. They're the ones that are paying, the millions. And collectively around the world, you're in the billions of dollars to these leagues and to these clubs. So for MLS to start up its own TV network, for it to be a success, they would have to make sure in terms of subscriptions, having large numbers of people subscribing to that and being able to generate more money from that than they could from the deals with Fox and Univision, etc. And the challenge is that up until this point, is that the TV deals for MLS are combined with the U.S. men's national team. So when Fox and ESPN and Univision go big in on a big six-year deal with MLS, it's for MLS and U.S. men's national team combined. So MLS is just a portion of that. So collectively, MLS gains from that as well as USSF gains from that in terms of working together to get more money rather than going separately and probably getting less of a deal. So it's a good idea. It's just with the current business model, the way it is, it's not going to work. And I think MLS Live is probably the best thing that's as close as possible to what he's thinking about, Ian, but not quite what you're expecting, I don't think. But that's just the state of the industry that we're in. So listeners, if you do have any questions for us or any feedback, we'd love to read that out on air. Anything in regards to watching soccer on TV or online, you can reach us through email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com, through Twitter @WSoccerTalk, or through Facebook @facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk. Now, moving on to our featured topic of the week, Kartik, and this one is the title of it is How Columbus Crew, How the Controversy with Columbus Crew is the Best Thing That Could Happen to MLS. And I say this actually from personal experience because it's one of those things that in this past week, I've probably watched more MLS games than I have in the past few months because largely a part of it is Columbus Crew. It's one of those things that I want to see what's happening to this team. I want to see, on the pitch, are they playing any differently? What's happening in the stadium in terms of the reaction from the fans? Can they go all the way in advance in this tournament? To me, that's the thing about Major League Soccer is it's such a squeaky clean league, the way it's run. There's not a lot of controversy. And part of that is controlled because MLSsoccer.com is for the most part kind of the source for most Major League Soccer news, unless it's on a team-by-team basis. But even then, most of the news comes out of MLSsoccer.com. So it comes out of a website that's very controlled in terms of the messaging, in terms of what they cover. So there's not a lot of investigative reporters or beat reporters that are breaking stories about some of the things that are happening. Yes, incidents happen with players, DUIs and domestic violence and stuff like that, which is horrible. But nothing happens really on kind of a national scale. And this Columbus Crew story is a national story that involves MLS. It doesn't make MLS look good in any way, but it does make TV viewers want to watch Columbus Crew play. What do you think, Kartik?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's an increased interest in watching Columbus play, seeing if they can maybe head off this move by winning a title in Columbus. What happens if Columbus hosts MLS Cup? it's definitely creating a spike in ratings. I mean, to the point where I think I've casually watched the other MLS playoff games. I've had them on. We talked about it in what we've watched. But the Columbus matches I've watched every second of and have been captivated by, particularly the game against New York at home the other night. And that will happen, assuming they're 4-1 up on aggregate. Barring a disaster, they'll have a home match in the next round against likely Toronto, and I think, and that's a big rivalry too because of the distance between the two clubs. I think one of the things now for MLS is how do they handle this? I mean, the short-term bump has been good in terms of getting eyeballs on their product, but it also is feeding even further anger about Anthony Precourt and the potential move, and even the talk of conspiracy theories about did they deliberately have additional security at this game against New York City FC so there would be photos of empty seats taken and circulated to make it look like, you know, to justify the move, right? Mm-hmm. And then there has been a lot of talk in the last 36 hours that they reported the attendance from the match. You know, we always complain that MLS spikes their attendance and embellishes their attendance that in a favorable way, that they actually may have underreported the attendance from this match in order, again, to justify the move. So MLS's PR operation, which for years has been really sound and fine-tuned, is having a little bit of a hard time with this. But I think it is certainly creating a lot of interest in Columbus games from soccer fans who don't necessarily watch the MLS playoffs otherwise, you know, people who watch the Premier League, watch Champions League, etc.
Yeah, so looking at the TV numbers, so for this past week, so the Halloween night, Tuesday night match between Columbus and New York City FC on ESPN, that one had 424,000 viewers, which is incredible. I mean, for a Halloween night, and also, I think, was it World Series that night? I can't remember. But anyway, that's a big number. The week before, last week, Atlanta against Columbus on ESPN2, that was on a Thursday night from, I think, like 7 to 9 o'clock Eastern, and that had 309,000 viewers, which, again, is a great number. Of course, that's a little bit of the kind of – there's definitely a lot of soccer fans that like the way that Atlanta play. So there's a lot of people watching, tuning in to watch that. But for the first time in a long time, we've got a team, Kartik, that I think – nationally, soccer fans can gravitate around. So there's those fans that hate MLS, that hate everything about U.S. soccer, will probably tune in to watch this because now they're going to be trying to support Columbus and hoping that they go far in this tournament just to shake things up a little bit. And just, you mean, in terms of that squeaky clean image that we've had before that we mentioned, is have some conversations, have some topics. And I like this week, too, how on ESPN, I think at halftime, for the Columbus NYCFC game, they zoomed in on, you mean, on fans in the crowd. On, you mean, there was one guy holding a pumpkin, and he carved out hashtag Save the Crew, and they kind of zoomed in on that. So they're having intelligent, serious, honest, open conversations about this, and it is something that it's important, not just to Columbus Crew fans and not to MLS haters, but just any soccer fans in the United States. In terms of if this can happen to Columbus, this could happen to any team in Major League Soccer. And what does this mean about the identity of the teams, of the clubs in the United States? It's a great conversation, and it's a great topic, and I'm sure MLS is probably hating life in terms of everything that's happening. But the worst possible scenario for MLS is that that the Crew get knocked out of the next round. Then all of a sudden, there's going to be a lot of people that won't tune in, perhaps, or maybe not. Maybe it's the Crew has gotten people to watch these MLS games, and those fans might go on and maybe watch more of these games for the later rounds, even if the Crew's not in it. The worst possible scenario for MLS is that the Crew goes all the way to the final and wins MLS Cup. Imagine if that happens.
Yeah, I think that there's a strong possibility that happens at this point because Toronto, they would have to get by, but if they get by Toronto, they'd probably be favored against any Western Conference team, honestly, yeah. The way the season has gone and the fact that Columbus is now on a long unbeaten streak. Got a number of draws in there, but they haven't actually lost a game, I think, in about 2 months now, which is often forgotten in this conversation because they were playing well when Precourt, when this whole thing came out. They were arguably at the time the hottest team in Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. And the conversation went from, hey, this is a dark horse team that because MLS has a playoff system and doesn't award their champion in a traditional way, they're the hot team entering the playoffs or the hot team entering the competition, so to speak, that they could win it, to, oh my goodness, you know, they're probably going to just bomb out because how are the players going to react? It is a catch-22 for MLS. I think the longer Columbus is in the spotlight, the more we're talking about these maps. Now, short term, it's great because it gets more eyeballs on the product. It gets higher television ratings. It gives MLS the opportunity to convince some skeptics who might be tuning in as kind of an anti-MLS thing, as you said earlier, an opportunity to convince them that their actual on-field product is pretty good. But again, long term, they don't want to have this conversation. I mean, it's a very uncomfortable conversation, especially given now the potential for legal action or litigation in Bexar County, just south of Travis County and Austin in the San Antonio area.
Yeah, I'll close on this. And that was Taylor Twellman talking about the Euro 2016 tournament when he was in France for the month, focusing, you know, doing the commentating and studio analysis. But he said afterwards, he said that the MLS talking points, the stories that were going into the European Championship in early June of that summer, when he came back from France and came back to the United States, it was the same talking points. Nothing had changed. There was nothing else to talk about. It was just the same topics that had been mentioned in an entire month earlier. So it is something that it's exciting. It's exciting because you don't know what's going to happen. It adds a whole level of soap opera and drama to Major League Soccer that's been missing so much for such a long time. So yeah, it's fascinating watching, and it's good television at the end of the day, which is what MLS wants. So sometimes I think they just need to kind of loosen the screws a little bit and just let things breathe rather than being so controlling and so, you mean, monopolizing in many ways.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, but that's just not in their nature as a league.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right, Kartik, so you've got a lot of stuff going on. I know it's a busy time of the year for you, but where can listeners find you on the internet if they want to catch up on your latest stories or your rants and raves?
Yeah, so Twitter, KKFLA737, obviously. At our site at worldsoccertalk.com. I've written a couple of pieces this week at socktakes.com. I'll be contributing occasionally to that site, which is partly run by our former host of this podcast and its previous incarnation, Nipun Chopra, and also contribute in various other places, First America, etc.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.